the impact that I have, especially with the kids.
Yeah.
When it comes to kids and music and art, I want to one day be 80 years old, 90, and have somebody come up to me and said, hey, because of the International Salsa Museum, I was able to become a musician and win 20 Grammys and record so many albums. And like, you inspired me to connect to my roots and pass it on to my kids. That to me is like gold there. Making sure that the younger generation, along with the older generation as well, that they see themselves and their culture through the lens of the International Salsa Museum.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development, specifically with guests who are alumni of the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. In our third season, we hold conversations about engagement and community-driven entrepreneurship. Creating positive and hyper-local impact means fostering deep understanding with stakeholders. We invite you to hear entrepreneurs discuss their own experiences with meeting and collaborating with their fellow community members where they are at, developing and serving with carefully designed and innovative solutions. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 15 with Willie Rodriguez of the International Salsa Museum. Willie, welcome to the Communitas of New York podcast. I am really thrilled to have you on the show. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Monique. This is really special. We were on the same cohort.
Yes.
Great. We didn't really get to speak much, but This is going to be an in-depth conversation, and I'm looking forward to just having this conversation with you.
I am as well, which is exactly why I want to start off with the intro on telling us a little bit about who you are, what is it that you do, and your journey to where you are now.
That's a very loaded question, but I'm going to try my best to keep it concise. Well, who am I? Well, my name is Willie Rodriguez. I'm a kid from Washington Heights with a deep passion for music, art, and culture. The way I got into the music industry was that about 5 years old, my father bought me a keyboard, and right out the box, I started playing Happy Birthday. And he goes, how did you learn how to play that? You just took that out the box. And I'm like, I don't know. And then he looks at me, he goes, you want to take piano lessons? And I'm like, sure. Not knowing where this was going to take me.
Yeah.
And here we are. I mean, I'm 43 now. So here we are years later. At 15, I went to LaGuardia High School of Professional Performing Arts. Around 10 years old, I used to do events, recitals at Carnegie Hall. I was playing classical music for 15 years. So, you know, at 10 was my recitals at Carnegie Hall. Well, my teenage years, I went to LaGuardia High School. I joined my first band when I was 17 years old, where we performed for everybody in the city, from mayors to businesses to parades to all types of events. That experience as a teenager, being in this band, really opened up my eyes to the power of music and community. And then at 19, I became the musical director to the Tito Puente Junior Orchestra. For those that don't know who Tito Puente is, shame on you. Look him up. He is the king of Latin music. And so I became the musical director of his son, because Tito Puente passed away in the year of 2000. And then soon after that, started touring the world. I was playing salsa. So I started traveling the world with my other salsa band called La Excelencia. And we went from New York to Norway to Istanbul to Belgium, Spain, Germany, Poland, Mexico. I mean, I've been all over the world. And just experiencing that and seeing my growth within the community, playing for politicians and parades here in New York City, and then to see it on a global stage, I mean, it led me to where I'm currently at now. And taking in all those experiences just opened up my eyes to the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit, but there's a lot more.
Yeah, that is an amazing journey. And shout out to your father for noticing that and nurturing it at such a young age. Yeah. Like, not even ignoring it. Like, oh, that's just something, but really taking that. And then look where you are today. So I love that you shared that journey and just like how immediately I can feel the love for what you do. And I want to transition into now talking about what you're doing at the International Salsa Museum. So can you talk a little bit about how you started and your journey?
Well, the conception or the idea of building the International Salsa Museum came about around 2020, I would say, with a simple phone call. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who is now also a co-founder, Ilyales Reyes, and she mentioned to me, hey, Willie, is there any salsa museum out in New York City that my friend, Manny Tavares, who's also a co-founder, Manny Tavares wants to take his mother to a salsa museum. We really couldn't think of one. We know that there's organizations out there that curate and that do programming, salsa programming, but not necessarily a salsa museum. So that's what sparked the idea, where Manny, who is very well connected and politically and in finance, and Lily very well connected in the community space and with children, and me being connected with music and working with the Tito Puente family, right there, we all decided, well, if there isn't one, why not build it? Mm-hmm. And so that's what started the whole conversation. You know, to be transparent, I said, listen, guys, if we do this and we go all in, please understand that there's no plan B. We have to go in all the way or we don't do this at all. And we all agreed. And so that's what started the whole thing with the Salsa Museum.
Mm-hmm. So burning the boats, like no going back, no plan B. I love that.
Exactly. Like we learned at Communitas, there's the problem. What are you going to do to solve it? Right. So yeah, here we are now working on it. And we're 3-4 years in.
That is awesome. And when you talk about how there were organizations that may have had program around, you know, salsa, but there wasn't anything like a museum. So when you think about a museum, that's like a huge undertaking. So for mm-hmm. you, can you talk about the plan site, like some of the things that went into making this into fruition, and how did you go about acquiring the space and all of those things?
Well, that's the thing, that we're still in the process of finding a space. Mm-hmm. Now, if you guys do remember from Communitas, community, mm-hmm. and also if you look us up in the news, it's all over the internet. Our big goal was to get the space at the Kingsbridge Armory. And, you know, not to get too political, or there's some stuff that I can't really mention right now, but it didn't work out for some reasons that I cannot really disclose at this current moment, but the Kingsbridge Armory did not work out. So we're still currently looking for a space. Gotcha. Now, in the meantime, we're not going to wait till we have a space to get this up and rolling. So what have we been doing while looking for a space? We have had multiple exhibitions. We've had community programming. We've done various events. We've done various news interviews and stuff like this, podcasting, and letting people know that although we don't have a space, we're still here and we can still shine light on the legends, the salsa music, the importance of salsa music and culture within our Latin community and abroad, not just in the Latin community. And we're still here advocating, even though we don't have a space yet.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because sometimes some people can think that if it doesn't happen this way, it can't happen until it looks like this. So for you, you're saying we're still moving our feet in this way until we get the space. And I think that's so important for entrepreneurs to hear as they're listening on how you have to be resourceful and still get the work done.
Right, exactly. Especially in New York City. When it comes mm-hmm. to New York City and real estate, like it's not the easiest thing to tackle. But again, where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's community, there will always be a way. And so I'm grateful for organizations like the Jazz Museum in Harlem to support us. And they loaned us their space for 3 months last year, where we held an exhibition. And it was, according to Tracy, who was the executive director at the time, she mentioned to me that the Salsa exhibition was the most attended exhibition they have ever had in the history of the Jazz Museum. Also, currently, we're having conversations with the Louis Armstrong Museum in Queens, where they want to collaborate with us and talk about programming and possibly offering us a space to do an exhibition. So, you know, organizations like that, and then working with the International Salsa Congress, who themselves, every year, they have this Congress, which Sun Moon, hello, Sun Moon, has been to before.
Sun Moon Jung is the executive director of Communitas America.
I invited her to one, I think it was like 2 years ago, and she saw the impact that was going on there, where 10,000 dancers from all over the world came to New York City to dance salsa, and we had an exhibition at the Merriam Arkee in Times Square. So teaming up with organizations is one of the best things to do while you're currently still building.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And so, Willie, I want to talk about beyond the museum experience. So you also have experience mm-hmm. with work in the creative arts for over 25 years. So how did mm-hmm. you get into the broader music industry?
Ooh, that's another loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good question. How did I get in? Like I told you, in my teens, I was part of this music group. And at that time, right around high school, towards my college years, I wanted to get into the music industry, meaning I wanted to work for a record label. Mm-hmm. And I was sending out my resumes. Email wasn't really a thing back then. I had to like literally mail out my resume through postal service with a stamp. And I was going into offices as well, asking, hey, is there an opportunity? And nobody was giving me an opportunity, either because I didn't have the experience or because I was too young. But that didn't stop me. I was very young and ambitious. So throughout my travels and throughout my experience with my salsa band, like Silencia, and with Tito Jr., I was reading books. I was asking a lot of questions to musicians, to record executives, to managers. I was just a big sponge. And I said, okay, well, if the record industry is not going to give me an opportunity, well, then let me dabble into different fields within the music industry myself and see if it is a fit for me. And so I did that. I've done everything from management, production. I've done A&R work myself, meaning A&R work in the sense of like, I would find an artist and then I would go to a label and say, hey, this is an amazing artist. Or I myself would work with them on an independent level. So in other words, how I got into the business was by me seeing that the industry was not taking me in, but I'm going to go ahead and learn anyway, right, and put myself in that position. And then here I am now where I feel like I overqualify for a lot of positions that are out there because I just learned so much, especially when I traveled the world. I saw everything from how bands get booked, managing a budget, stage direction. I'm a musical director as well, so currently still doing that. So at the end of the day, if you're going to enter the music business, the music part is fun and it's nice and it's creative. But at the end of the day, it's called the music business for a reason. It's a business. And so as an artist, as a producer, you have to learn those aspects of the industry and how it moves because it's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I love that. It's so much experience. And so is this the kind of business work related to your agency, the Valence Agency?
100%. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I had to because at one point I started the Valence Agency in, I believe it was 2015. I started it and I said to myself, well, I have all this experience, but I need to incorporate myself. And so I started an S Corp. The Valence Agency is an S Corp. And I said to myself, well, I've been traveling all over the world, getting all these contacts. Because at the end of the day, to be honest with you and be transparent with the public, while I was touring with like Silencia in all these different countries, while the band would go hang out afterwards and like maybe hang out with the ladies and do their thing, I was talking to the manager of the club. I was talking to the promoters. I was talking to the security at the front, you know, learning one about the business, the clubbing industry, and also booking. So I said to myself, when I got back from touring back around 2015, I said, well, I have all this amazing experience and connections. Why not start an agency that can help support other up and coming artists? And that's how the Valence Agency was born. But also, can I share a quick story?
Yeah.
It changed my life. I have to share the story. Another reason why I started the Valence Agency was because I was on tour one time in Haiti and I was performing in a town called Akin, Haiti. And how can I say this? I got overwhelmed with the sense of joy that the people that we were performing for, that they had. The reason we were there was because the government had paid for us to go out there and perform because Haiti had just gone through a major earthquake. Mm-hmm. After that earthquake, they were hit with a hurricane, like a few months later. Like it was back to back. It was horrific. And while I was on stage performing for these people from Haiti, it didn't matter the despair and the sadness that was happening around them. They were joyous. They were cheering. They were dancing. And while I was on stage directing the band, I'm going to be 100% honest, I forgot that I was musical directing. I forgot because I don't know what got into me, but I felt the spirit. I felt the universe. I felt this energy that overtook me. And honestly, being transparent, I began to cry on stage.
Wow.
I began to cry. And I said to myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Bring joy to people while on stage through music and just see everybody happy regardless of what's happening. And then at that, the band snapped me out of it. They were like, Willie, it's been 4 minutes. What are you doing? And I was like, oh, okay. We got to go. Okay, Mambo, one. And I counted it in and the band started. But that was the birth. Once I got back from Haiti,
right,
that's when everything came to my senses and I started the Valence Agency.
That is such a powerful story. And I love that because a lot of times people say like business is like spiritual, but it's like all the things that go on. And it's just like, I always think about music being that thing that takes you to that space that makes it just all feels better. So
music heals.
Yeah, it does. Definitely. So that's such a powerful story.
Thank you.
And Willie, do you have any earliest memory of experiencing live music?
My earliest experience of experiencing live music. Yes, I have my very first earliest experience. It was actually captured on camera.
Oh, wow.
On public access. It really was. I was 3 years old. And my father took me to Lehman College to see a man by the name of Ramon Orlando. Please, you guys, look him up. He is one of the best musicians in all of Dominican Republic. He is an icon and he is just an amazing human being. So Ramon Orlando. So I was sitting down at Lehman College and first front row. Ramon Orlando is also a piano player, amazing piano player. And I remember the piano being coming up from the stage, like he was being lifted as like a god. At 3 years old, I'm like with my mouth open, like, what is going on? And my father always would tell me wherever there would be a piano player, my father would be like, look what he's doing. And so that was my earliest memory of seeing a live performance. And since then, I have become friends with the Ramon Orlando family. I'm good friends with his brother. I know his father very well. And so it all came to full circle from when I was 3 years old.
That is amazing. So that is a big thing because, like you said, it was almost as if like a god, but that's just all the things that bringing it together and why it's so powerful in your life. Now, was it a salsa performance by Ramon?
It was a merengue performance. Even though he does salsa as well, but he's basically known for merengue. And his father is named Cuco Baloy. So if you guys look him up, Cuco Baloy, there's a song that's very famous called Juliana, which goes, Juliana, que mala eres, Juliana. That was Ramon Orlando and Cuco Baloy.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So earlier, Willie, you mentioned your exhibition and the amazing attendance, which was amazing. And are there any other examples of exhibitions you've done like that?
Well, there's been two major exhibitions that have really created an impact. Well, for those that don't know, the International Salsa Museum won the grant for Communitas.
Yes.
This is why I'm so grateful. Woof, I'm gonna get emotional. This is why I'm so grateful for the Communitas community, because with those funds, part of it was set aside for music programming, but another part of that was set aside to help us with our exhibition, which was an exhibition on Tito Puente and La Lupe. That was the first time ever that Tito Puente and La Lupe were exhibited in the same space at one time. And so that exhibition, with the funds from Communitas, along with other people, organizations that supported us, thank you very much, the other organizations, we were able to put on this amazing exhibition, and it got picked up by NPR. It got picked up by Rolling Stones magazine, Grammy.com. They showed up. Telemundo, NBC, Univision showed up. This reporter from Colombia showed up. I mean, the impact from that exhibition was immense, to the point where people now are calling us to do more exhibitions. They want to see more. Oh, so I'll take it back. The one before that one was basically a general exhibition with a bunch of the stuff that we had, along with items that the community that we reached out to, they brought in their items as well, and we were able to exhibit. And we're so grateful for Sony Music, because Sony Music was able to get Victor Manuel at our very first exhibition. To have Victor Manuel, who is a megastar in salsa music, to have him there to show up and to sign autographs and see the exhibition and talk with us and perform at the International Salsa Congress, that was a very big deal. So in the near future, for 2026, we do plan on doing another exhibition with the International Salsa Congress. I cannot mention the exhibition at this current moment, but this is going to be a really, really good one.
I think it is as well. So that's exciting. And yeah, that's some amazing work and impact there. So I would love to know more about the process and strategy in terms of planning these exhibitions. And even how does technology play a part?
Okay, the process. We're a small team.
Yeah.
So when it's time to do an exhibition, it's all hands on deck. Where me, myself, Denise Torres, we work together, along with a few other people from the International Salsa Museum. We work together and we reach out to the community. When I say the community, we reach out to our contacts, and also we do our research and we work with local artists. We work with photographers and we work with people who just like to collect and curate items. On top of that, we also personally reach out to legacy artists and musicians. In other words, for example, one photographer that's very dear to our heart. I thank him so much, is Joe Conzo. Joe Conzo Jr., he's known for taking hip hop's baby pictures. So you guys can look him up, Joe Conzo Jr. He's currently at the Hip Hop Museum as we speak. He has a few of his photos there. He has helped us out tremendously because outside of taking hip hop's baby pictures, he also took a lot of salsa pictures as well, like salsa artists, along with Ernie Panicioli and Danny Hastings, who took very first pictures of Mark Anthony. So we have a community that we can reach out to. If we're trying to get in contact with somebody, we're 1 degree of separation from anybody else that we want to get in contact with. So basically, that's how an exhibition is born. We use the resources that we have. As far as technology, we haven't necessarily implemented technology when it comes to our exhibitions, but we have used technology clearly to do our research and reach out to people and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I am definitely going to be looking up all of these people. You are definitely putting me on today.
Ah, you're very welcome. Yeah, definitely. These people are amazing. Again, yeah. Joe Conzo, Ernie Panicioli also took hip hop's pictures back in the day.
Yeah.
Danny Hastings, he did the Wu-Tang album, the 36 Chambers.
Yes.
He was the photographer of that album. So to have these Latinos also involved, not only in hip hop, but in salsa music,
right.
It's an amazing thing. And it also shows the correlation between hip hop and Latin music. Like we were all in this together at the birth of hip hop. So yeah. I'm glad those photographers were there for these moments and capture the moments.
For sure. And so it seems like you find curators amongst community.
100%. We have to. Because at the end of the day, salsa is community. I also have to give a quick shout out and mention Artman Dan, he's an artist from Washington Heights. I call him like the Picasso of our era. I mean, his style is just amazing. And so Artman Dan, if you're hearing this, thank you so much for supporting us, along with all the other artists as well. So sorry, back to your question.
Yes. No, this is good. Wrote that down too. Okay. And so salsa, like you said, salsa is community. So what besides that do you think it is about salsa music that is so attractive to people?
Oh, another loaded question. These are great questions. Why is it so attractive? I mean, right now, I have to mention, Bad Bunny is like the number one artist in the world right now, right?
Yes.
He's doing the Super Bowl in February, I believe, right? Well, let's not go into Bad Bunny. Let me go back. Okay, salsa as a whole, it's the rhythm, it's the music, it's the lyrics. I mean, it's joy, it's togetherness, it's your birthday party when you were a kid, it's a baby shower, it's a divorce party, it's everywhere. And when you walk through the streets of New York City, especially in the summertime, you cannot avoid hearing salsa music.
Right.
It's going to be in your face at all times, especially if you're walking in the barrio or in Queens or in Washington Heights. It's everywhere. Aside from that, it's also the connection that we have to salsa music. It's in our DNA. And I'm speaking from a Latino standpoint. And not even like just Latino, but also African-American. And
for sure.
Foundation of salsa music is from Africa. All those rhythms, they all came from Africa. And then they just made their way through the Atlantic slave trade, made its way to the Caribbean and Cuba, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, it made its way there. And I would say that Cuba, the roots of it, of salsa music, is mostly from Africa and Cuba. And then those sounds migrated to New York City. And in New York City is where the boom happened. This is where we were able to commercialize it and then expand it to the rest of the world and spread it all over the world. So our roots, when it comes to salsa music, is deeply, deeply embedded in our DNA. And I think that that's what really has us tied into the music and why we love it so much.
For sure. And I want to go back to the Bad Bunny reference because it was like, you are so on point because, so I was looking at my other podcast, Blacks in Business. Mm-hmm. They did like the Spotify Wrapped every year.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, people who listen to Blacks in Business usually listen to this artist and you have the hip hop artist, but you also had like Bad Bunny there. So I'm like, Willie, you are so on point because all of it is, there is that connection and there is that mm-hmm. community there when it comes to like music as well.
Yeah. I mean, Bad Bunny just broke records. I mm-hmm. mean, he did a whole residency in Puerto Rico. I think it was like 30 days or 31 days. And every single show was sold out.
Yeah.
Why? Yes, the music is great. It was also cultural identity.
Yeah.
So not only did he perform salsa, but he did bomba, he did plena, he did reggaeton, he did merengue. You know, so as a Latino, for us, that's like mm-hmm. all the genres that we love combined. Him and his team really tapped into what it is to experience the Latin culture. And that's what made this concert series so successful. The fact that he was able to tap into that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I love it. I love how just like the highlights and just all the things coming together. So you also mentioned that salsa took off when it hit New York. And did that change the music sounds or is structured, or what kind of flavors did New York add, would you say?
Oh, no, it definitely did. There was a place in Manhattan back in the day called the Palladium. You guys can look it up. It used to be, I believe, on 52nd and Broadway, around that area. Tito Puente Jr. makes fun of it now, but now it's a parking lot, which is unfortunate. But the Palladium was a nightclub where all types of cultures and races would get together and listen to mambo music. Now, please understand that salsa is just an umbrella term. Salsa is not necessarily what the genre is comprised of. What's underneath salsa is mambo, guaguancó, cha-cha-cha, rumba, guaracha. There's all these different subgenres that make up salsa. So going back to the Palladium, there was Jewish people, American people, Latinos, and African Americans, everybody combined at the Palladium nightclub listening to mambo music. Tito Rodriguez, Machito, and Tito Puente. Now, fast forward, that sound of mambo, it shifted. I mean, if you listen to mambo, you hear jazz, the influence of jazz in there. You hear the Latin music clearly, the Latin rhythms, the African rhythms, hence the birth of Latin jazz with Dizzy Gillespie and Chano Pozo, but that's another story. But fast forward into the 60s, you have all these other salsa groups that came out. El Gran Combo, Johnny Pacheco was doing his thing with guaracha and song. And then in the 70s is like when Fania All-Stars was born. And so throughout the decades, salsa went through its evolution. I would say in the 50s, it was more traditional mambo music. 60s, you hear more of the sound changing. In the 70s, you hear salsa dura, which is hardcore salsa, hard trombones, gritty trumpets, hard percussion. In the 80s and 90s, you hear the like the romantic side of salsa, where everything sounds like R&B and salsa mixed together. So salsa definitely went through its evolution throughout New York City. And the world, you know, the entire world, they adapted to it and loved it. I mean, you know, Marc Anthony, Jerry Rivera, you wouldn't necessarily consider them hardcore salsa. They are salsa, but they're a different subgenre of salsa, even though it's still considered salsa. So I'm sorry I'm going long-winded here, but
no, it's good. Just
showcasing the evolution of like Tito Puente and Tito Rodriguez to Marc Anthony. Two different styles, but it's still considered salsa, both, even though Tito Puente never really liked the word salsa. That's another conversation.
I think that's a perfect answer to the question because it's such a rich history, and it also is about educating and understanding, because it is, like you said, like the umbrella term. And I think that's important for people to know as well. And so, Willie, you are also a member of the Recording Academy. You were elected recently Secretary of the Academy for the New York chapter. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So can you talk a little bit about what this role entails and how it helps you engage with the community? And what is the Latin Music Task Force?
Oof. Okay. I love the Recording Academy. Regardless of what people say out there in the news, I'm not going to get into the political side of things, but I love the Recording Academy and everything that they do. I always tell people, especially when I try to like have people come in and join, I tell them, please do not join the Recording Academy only looking for a Grammy. Join the Recording Academy because you want to make a difference in the music industry, and because you want to make a difference in education, in arts, and because you want to push this industry forward and not just worry about the Grammy. So what does being secretary of the New York chapter entail? It's me being a pillar of support for the New York chapter. I mean, we have our president, we have a vice president, and then there's me, the secretary, and then there's a governors. And so my role is to really support the mission of the Recording Academy, support the president of the New York chapter, and to also support the CEO of the Recording Academy as well, what their vision is. And I'm speaking about the hierarchy, right? What comes from on top, and how can we collectively as a community work together to make sure that we maintain integrity within the Recording Academy? And not only maintain integrity, but also what laws need to be passed. You know, now we're dealing with AI, we're dealing with the music industry. There's a big shift happening. How does that impact us as musicians and artists? So my role is to just support the community the best way that I can. The Latin Music Task Force has been dismantled for now. what the Latin Music Task Force was, it was a committee where we would reach out to the Latin community and engage them in whatever they needed. They wanted to become members. We would teach and guide them how to become members of the Recording Academy. If somebody wanted to learn more on how the music industry works, like, we would create panel discussions and events to bring in Latino community so they can have a better understanding on how to move within the Latin music space. But now the Latin Music Task Force has been not dismantled, but now we have joined forces collectively with all the other communities. So it's like, we want to include everybody. So Asian, Indian, Latinos, African American. So now it's like, how can we collectively join all these branches together and really look out for the community? So it has a different name now, but it's no longer the Latin Music Task Force.
Got it. And so the focus of this season of the podcast is about collaboration with the community, which you have just spoken about and have been doing a lot of. So when you think about building a museum, it means to collaborate with community stakeholders. So how do you consult the community when conceiving of a museum?
How do I consult with the community?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks different ways, yeah, depending on who I'm speaking to. If I'm speaking to a musician about wanting to collaborate, I mean, I'm a musician myself. And we all know that salsa music and its legacy, especially the older artists, that their history and their legacy is not being attended to the way that it should be. And I speak to musicians with that purpose on, we have to protect the roots. We have to protect our elders, and we have to make sure that their legacy doesn't end up in a storage room. Mm-hmm. Or in the file somewhere in a hard drive and it gets deleted on purpose. I mean, not on purpose, but it gets deleted. So I just move with, this is extremely important and it's beyond me. In general, I don't want people to think that this is about the Willie Rodriguez show, which is not. This is a mission that's way bigger than me, way bigger than you, way bigger than all of us. Because at the end of the day, 30 years from now, if we don't preserve this history, how are we going to move forward? I mean, people need to know where their roots are at. So I always move with that purpose, with that feeling, with that emotion that we need to preserve this. We need to preserve this culture. And so again, I mentioned that's how I speak to musicians, but in reality, that's how I speak to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the executives. I had a conversation with Google Arts and Culture. Like, they reached out to us and we had the same conversation. Like, why are you doing the International Salsa Museum? And I let them know exactly why, just like this. Like, it's important. And also other organizations as well. BNY Mellon, the bank. I had conversations with them, and Banco Popular as well. I always speak from the point of, this needs to happen or else it's going to really affect us in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Have the sense of urgency.
Exactly. Urgency. We don't have much time.
I love that you mentioned that. And so it seems like there are so many hats to wear, even in the planning stage. So you have the musicians talking to musicians, community members honoring the legacy, and business-minded person imagining a museum. So you summed up the way that you operate in a very interesting way. And so, speaking more on the legacy and those that came before is transmitted through this project, are there some teachers or mentors in the community who have supported you in learning and your knowledge and all the things?
Yes, there's a few musicians out there that, not just musicians, but people in general, but I'm going to speak about the musicians because they are my guiding light. There's one particular musician that I want to point out. His name is Pete Miranda. I call him Uncle Pete. And there's also another one called Al Acosta. And these two that I always go to because they were there in the 1950s and 60s playing with Tito Puente, playing with Hector Lavoe, playing with Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis. And these guys were there. So I always take pride. And when there's a Tito Puente Jr. concert, I always try to hire them to come and perform with us. And while we're in the back, you know, waiting to go on stage, we always sit down and just have conversations. And Pete Miranda and Al Acosta always talk about the good old days. And again, also how important it is to keep this legacy alive. So those are my elders. Those are the ones that I speak to the most when it comes to music and music history. Then there's another lady, two of them I have to point out. And Nina Olson, she used to work with Boys Harbor Conservatory of Music. She is an amazing human being, along with Vicky Gold-Levy. Mm-hmm. Vicky Gold-Levy is an older lady, an amazing, beautiful soul, where she herself started the Museum of Atlantic City.
Wow.
And she, along with Nina, have been my go-to when it comes to the organizational side of things. So I have Pete and Al on the music side. I have Vicky and Nina on the organizational side. And then I have my other mentors as well, my business mentors. So throughout my life, aside from the International Salsa Museum, throughout my life, I've always had various mentors to guide me on how to move in this industry. So I'm grateful for them, and they keep me in check along with other people that I have around my circle. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I hope, did I answer your question there?
Yeah, you did. And it also made me think of another question, because I think that's so powerful in just sitting down and having conversations, like you said, with the elders, because I think so many times it can be thought as if we have to move through life so fast and just, you don't have time to talk and get to share those stories. So for you, even when you do that, like, how does it make you think about how you want to preserve your legacy?
I would say this is my legacy. How do I want to preserve my legacy? Oh, you know what? Well, it was Vicky and my good friend, George. Both of them told me, Willie, do not save your notes on your computer. It's okay to use that as a tool, but make sure that you're writing down on notebooks and planners and that everything's being handwritten, because you'll be able in the future to look back at everything that you've done. And it's all marked. It's all dated. All your ideas, everything is like written down. And so that's going to help you preserve your legacy. And also at the same time, the best way for me is leaving behind the impact that I have, especially with the kids.
Yeah.
When it comes to kids and music and art, I want to one day be 80 years old, 90, and have somebody come up to me and said, hey, because of the International Salsa Museum, I was able to become a musician and win 20 Grammys and record so many albums. And like, you inspired me to connect to my roots and pass it on to my kids. That to me is like gold there. Making sure that the younger generation, along with the older generation as well, that they see themselves and their culture through the lens of the International Salsa Museum.
That is a true legacy builder and a beautiful answer. I love that.
Thank you. Yes. I get emotional. Sorry, I'm getting.
I love it. That means you care.
No, I really do. Like I told you before, going back in the music industry, they weren't giving me an opportunity. So I had to create the opportunity. And so now that I have all this experience and I still continue to learn, why would I hold that in as a gatekeeper and not give it to the younger generation? And why not support the older generation as well that don't have access or don't know how to maneuver in this digital world? Mm-hmm. So I'm on both ends, and I'm here being the middleman for the generations before me and for the generations after me.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I'm definitely inspired to write more of those things down, because it's true. It's like, we can't keep everything on the internet.
No, no.
Yeah.
What if something happens to your hard drive?
Right. Exactly that. Mm-hmm. And so as we're talking about it, so music carries for a certain story. Besides writing it down by hand, is there another method or strategy to preserve stories parallel to the music? Is it performance itself? Will the museum have a stage?
Oh, 100%, most definitely. Most definitely. You're saying how is history preserved or?
Mm-hmm. So besides writing it down, is there another method or strategy to preserve stories parallel to the music?
Parallel to the music. Well, music plays such a big role in this whole thing. I would say songwriting, that's still connected to music, but in your songwriting, I mean, when you listen to some of these salsa songs, there's history being told in a lot of them. There's history there. Just like any other record, whether you listen to hip hop or you listen to country or whatever, songwriting, again, the power of music, songwriting, that's, you can preserve history through there. But other ways of preserving, I mean, in the digital space, we're getting into this new thing with AI, and it's something that I am dabbing into. I think that stepping into this new realm is going to be very important for the International Salsa Museum, and using AI as a tool to help us preserve history and culture. I mean, right now, AI is so advanced. We're only a few years in. Imagine 10 years from now. So I'm constantly learning about AI. And so for me at this current moment, that would be utilizing the tools that the universe is giving us to preserve the culture is extremely important. And do not fall behind and don't sleep on AI, because it's coming to us fast. And if you don't learn it or know how to maneuver around it, you're going to be left behind. And so that's one way. The other way is, again, by teaching the youth through education.
Yeah.
That's preserving as well. When it comes to salsa music and the history of salsa, there's a lot of different stories on how salsa came about out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's counterproductive to the foundation of how salsa was born. And I say that because when you speak to certain countries, like if you speak to Puerto Rico or Venezuela or Colombia or Cuba or Dominican Republic, not everybody's going to have the same answer regarding the history of salsa music. And that's why it's so important for us, ISM, to make sure that we have our story straight, because at the end of the day, you don't want people to be confused. And so we have to use, again, the power of education to preserve this music, to preserve this culture, to preserve this legacy. Again, technology, AI, education, songwriting are just great ways to preserve this music, cultural identity as well. And not just 70 years old, but there's people just all ages, you know, that are just fall into depression because they didn't reach their goal, or they fall into drug habits and stuff like that. And to have an organization like Music Cares to be there for musicians is such a big deal. And that's something that ISM itself, once we are more established, we want to start a sector of ISM that also supports artists in that capacity as well, through mental wellness, health benefits, and stuff like that. So there are organizations out there. You just have to do your research. But Music Cares is definitely one of them, and so is the Recording Academy.
That is beautiful. I love that. And so I think it's also important, like you said, that people recognize what resources are out there. And then oftentimes I think it's also great because once you've gone through these resources and taken advantage of the resources, you're like, I also want to support those who help me. So give it back to those organizations as well.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. And also there's organizations out there that are, you know, for the youngsters. But again, I would say just visit the Recording Academy if you want to donate. There's various organizations within the Academy. There's Grammy U, there's Grammy in the Schools, there's Grammy Museum, that they're all doing great, great work.
Yeah. And
so hence why I advocate so highly for the Recording Academy.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Now, in the absence of the planned museum, where can I go and find salsa music right now?
Oof. Well, I'll tell you this, not necessarily in New York City, but in April, we have had the honor of speaking to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., the Smithsonian Museum. And there's going to be an exhibition that they're going to open up in April 2026 on salsa music.
That is awesome.
And so we've been in conversations with them for the past 2 years, I would say. They're supporting us in our efforts, and we're supporting them in their efforts. So if you want to know more about salsa and salsa history, go down to the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Make it a trip. As far as New York City, nightclubs, here's another sad part about what's happening in New York. A lot of these salsa clubs have closed down. Before, there was Latin Quarters and Copacabana, and you were able to go to even SOBs and Dance Salsa. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the nightclubs have just closed down. So I would say there's an organization called, that he sits on our board, Brandon Espinosa, called the Salsa Project.
Mm-hmm.
So the Salsa Project, he's one of the new up-and-coming promoters of salsa music in New York City. And he has these amazing events throughout New York City for people to come and dance salsa and to listen to live music. On top of that, also Lehman College has great music programming, salsa music programming. Hostos Community College as well has Latin salsa music. And that's about it for right now that I can think of off the top of my head.
Those are some great places to start. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also with like nightlife, club culture everywhere. It's almost like it's like dying down.
Yeah. I go to clubs to perform, but yeah, it's not the same.
It is not the same, which brings me to some of the challenges, the lessons and observations. So in terms of challenges, what was easy that you thought would be hard and vice versa?
What was easy that I thought would be hard? Starting from scratch, a salsa museum was like, what the hell? How is this going to happen? And the whole trademarking and protecting our brand, I thought that was going to be difficult and that we would have to go through these hurdles to just get ourselves trademarked. And it really wasn't. I was all in my head about it. Basically, all I had to do was go to the website, the trademark government website. Everything there is very self-explanatory. As long as you read, or you can get a lawyer as well, but why pay for a lawyer when you could just kind of do it yourself and learn? So that was an easy process for us, the organization. Also, fearful of I was concerned about our first exhibition, which took place at the International Salsa Congress. I didn't think that we were going to have enough items, and I didn't think the community was going to show up the way I wanted to. And to be honest, I was pretty overwhelmed with the response that we got, which taught me not to be scared or don't stress yourself out on what you think it's going to look like or how stressful it's going to be. If you just ask people, they will show up and they will help. You just have to jump that hurdle and jump over that hurdle of fear and just ask. Don't be shy about it. And if they can't help you, somebody else can help you, you know? So our first exhibition, we got tremendous local news supported it and tremendous artists and curators of this genre and an amazing team of volunteers that actually helped us out throughout the process. So yeah, I thought that was going to be difficult. Now, vice versa, what was difficult was setting up the whole thing. Our first exhibition, that was setting it up in the sense of like the day of. We only had 24 hours to set up an entire exhibition. Not even, we had less than 24 hours because the room that we were at the Marriott Marquis, there was a time issue there. And so we had honestly less than 24 hours to put the whole thing together. And that was difficult, but we had the community there supporting us. I lost sleep that night. And after that, I couldn't sleep for a few days after that. Wow. The stress level, it was just so high. So I had to learn really quickly on how to handle stress and deal with stress, which I'm glad I did. But honestly, having that first exhibition and just being transparent, it wore me out. It really did. Just because there was a lot of phone calls, a lot of stuff happening, a lot of moving back and forth. It was a lot. But the other thing I'll say that is difficult at the current moment is difficult dealing with the politics of New York City.
Not New York City, the big city.
What? New York? What?
No way.
No, you don't say. It's difficult dealing with the politics of New York City and real estate. And just seeing how politics really moves in the city and how you have to move and how careful you have to be moving within politics, that right there is something that is like, I'm never going to get it. There's all these different characters that you have to deal with on the local level, on a national level, and even on a global level as well. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to dealing with politics, for me, I've had to bite my tongue many, many times and not take everything so to heart because regardless of how they move, they're going to move however they want to move. So I had to learn how to adapt, pivot, and shift the narrative to reel in the community and reel in the politics and make them align with our vision and what our real purpose here is. And so that's been the hardest struggle for me at this current moment. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned before, we're aiming for the Kingsbridge Armory. And not to get into details, but there's a lot of moving parts politically there. And so we're currently dealing with that situation as we speak. And so it's important to have community around you, people that support you and that want to help you and guide you to ground you and center you so that you can move forward.
Yeah. And we don't have to get too far into it. I think that's a big point that you bring up, but it certainly sounds like you have to regularly interface with policymakers and enforcers and gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. And it sounds challenging, especially while I'm sure you're also trying to deal with funding and programming and all the ideals you'll imagine for the museum. So that said, may I ask, some of the funding sources for the International Salsa Museum are, or how you deal with funding and our fundraising?
At this current moment, because of the political stuff that we've been going through, there's been a slight pause on fundraising. And so for 2026, I can speak on that and how we're going to move forward with that. I've applied for a few grants through a few organizations. So we're applying through grants, getting funding through grants. We're asking the audience, the general public, to help us and donate as well. I mean, it really does go a long way. It's like, you know, even it's going to sound cliche, but even a dollar helps out with raising funds. So we do speak to the general public as far as fundraising, not as much as we should, but for 2026, that's going to ramp up. There are two people in Hawaii, believe it or not, that I am reaching out to. They reached out to us 2 years ago saying, hey, we're here to support you guys. We do grant writing. We want to support you and your mission. And I put them on hold. Yeah. But now for 2026, the goal is to reach out to our grant writers, to hire them and support us with grant writing and submit more grants for our programming. We also plan on doing events this year as far as like music performances.
Yeah.
So I'm currently in conversations with CCCADI, which is the African Cultural Diaspora Institute. Literally, last week just had a conversation with Melody, who's the executive director of the organization, and she is supporting us in our mission. So her and I are going to have a conversation once she gets back from her travels in January. And so we're reeling in the community again for 2026. We are definitely boots on the ground and reaching out to everybody that we can regarding funding.
I think that's great. And that's a great strategy. And I love how you always are keeping the community involved. And I think that's awesome.
Now we have to. All we got.
Certainly. And Willie, you've notably built partnerships with entities such as Meta, Google, Arts and Culture, and recording labels. What are the lessons you've learned from forging such relationships?
The lessons that I have learned. Jump in. Again, like I said before, don't be afraid to ask for what you want. And when you do go all in, like really giving it your best, it's a highlight of who you are as a person and as a representative of your organization. I'm really grateful for Meta. The way that partnership came about was that they actually reached out to us and they provided us with a budget to help them out with some Latin music programming for Meta. And I made sure that I got the best of the best and made the best music production possible for them. And that was great. And that's a relationship that's ongoing, along with Google Arts and Culture, where because of the work that we did in the past, it caught the eye of Google Arts and Culture and they reached out to us. And so they reached out to us saying, hey, we want to help you guys, although you don't have a building, we want to help you guys in creating your virtual exhibition. And I said, hell yeah. and so that virtual exhibition is ongoing. So that's one thing, like once you have the partnership, because they can come to you or you can go to them. But once you have it, it's like, how do you maintain it, right? And keep it going. So we've been in conversations with them throughout the past 2 years with Google Arts and Culture. And they've helped us out tremendously on establishing our exhibition, our virtual exhibition. And at the same time, we've also provided them with some Latin culture insight, which they weren't clear on. Like we've brainstormed on what they can do better to represent the Latino community. So it's win-win on both ends. And then another great partner of ours that we love so much is BNY Mellon. BNY Mellon, the Bank of New York, they went to an exhibition that we did with the International Salsa Congress and they loved what they saw. And we had a conversation about, hey, how can they help us support the mission of the International Salsa Museum? And I told them. And since then, we've been able to do programming at their events, Hispanic Heritage Month events. We've been able to support them and they support us. So at the end of the day, when it comes to brand partnerships, it's not take. ISM, I'm not a taker. You know, I will take the knowledge, I will take the influence, I will take the support, but at the same time, I'm going to give it back to you, just like you're giving it to me. I'm going to give it back to you. How can we support you? What is BNY Mellon doing to support the Latino community? Let us help you. Let us help Google. Let us help Meta. Let us help Grammys, the Recording Academy. What can we do better? So that's basically how I've been able to maintain these partnerships. It's a give and take on both ends. It's not just taking all the time.
I love that. That is such some solid advice. And even how you talk about like being in positions also for those partnerships, because they sometimes can be able to come to you as well. And that lets you know like what you're building is being seen.
And it's organic too. It's organic and it's with full transparency. I try not to hold stuff in. I mean, if unless I had an NDA signed or whatever, then I can't speak about it. Like I'll hold it in. But you know, it's all game here. Like, listen, Google didn't have to come to us at all, you know, but they did. Because they see the vision. And because they see the vision, then I'm going to support you guys in your vision. Just like the Recording Academy and Meta and everybody else. Consumer Reports, another one. LinkedIn. We worked with LinkedIn before. A&E Networks, we worked with them. Popular Bank, we've worked with them as well. So they're here to support us and we're here to support you. Because I have an understanding that a lot of these corporations do not know how to truly speak directly to the Latin community. So it's beyond salsa music, but it's like, how can we help you speak to the Latin community directly and creating impact and not making it feel like it's just a check in the box? You know, like, oh yeah, Hispanic Heritage Month, we did that. Woohoo. No, you did that, but how are you engaging with the Latin community while you're doing that? It's not just checkbox, you know, like it's beyond that. And these corporations influence community, not just Latin community, but all types of communities. So it's like, we're being authentic and what we're doing, we want you to be authentic as well. And I'm glad that you guys are reaching out to us to help you with being authentic and staying true. So that's very important.
For sure. And so we're wrapping up here, but as we are the Communitas of New York podcast, I'd like to ask you about Communitas America and the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. So you and me as well were in Ventures Cohort Number 9. Whoop, whoop.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that program... How did that program help you to take ISM to the next level or stage besides the winning the grant for the pitch competition?
Oof. The tools that Communitas gave us. There's a lot of stuff that I learned through Communitas. And being able to take those tools and apply it to the International Saucy Museum, not only just in the exhibition, but beyond, has been really great. But I love the fact that as being a member of Communitas, that we can always, regardless of where we are, we can always go back to Communitas and get the support that we need to move forward. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I also plan to do in 2026, is to tap into Communitas again and say, hey, we need support here. But at the same time, how can we help you? Like I said before, when we did the funding from the grant, we were able to launch our exhibition, right? The first one. But like I said before, that exhibition, it launched us in a way that it put us on the global map because it caught the attention, like I said before, of Rolling Stones magazine, NPR, and all these different news outlets. Yeah. And at the same time, it got the attention of our dear friends. And this is going to sound political here again, but then again, I don't care. I'm going to say it because music has no boundaries. Our friends in Cuba, the exhibition, along with the work that we're doing, caught the attention of our dear friends at the Cuban consulate. And I am grateful. I went to Cuba last year for the first time and saw and experienced the Cuban culture in a way that many people don't get to see it. So I say all that to say that all was sparked by the exhibition that we did, which Communitas helped us fund.
Yeah.
You know, so, and on top of that, like I said before, like just the lessons that Communitas teaches us and the community. I mean, it goes beyond what I'm saying now. It goes beyond what I'm saying, but Communitas has helped us out in a really big way.
I love that. Love that. Shout out to Communitas.
Yes. Thank you, Communitas. I always vouch for Communitas America and for everybody that's involved within the community. And I do need to tap in more for sure. I know that. And I do plan in 2026 to tap in more to the community. And also for those that are listening, like if you guys need support, mm-hmm. I'm here as well. Whether it's on the ISM side or is the music side or is television and media.
Yes.
I'm also in the television business as well. So I am here as a resource. Quick shout out to Hazel McIntyre.
Yes.
She's amazing. And I love the organization that she's doing, Making Money Movers. She's somebody that I've kept in contact from the Communitas America community. I've kept in contact with her. And actually last year, I believe, or it was a year and a half ago, we were able to collaborate on a specific event that was taking place by another organization called Broadway Express y Más, where Hazel came through and gave a brief lesson mm-hmm. on finance. And so that's something in the long term that we at the International Salsa Museum also want to do, is teach finance to the youth. And I'm grateful to have stayed in contact with Hazel. And hopefully Hazel and I can work on some other stuff in the near future as well. But big shout outs to Hazel and her organization. And along with you, what you're doing, Monique, is amazing. This is the first time that we're working together on something. And you know, I'm here for you, just like I know you're there for me as well.
For sure.
Shout out to all my people from Cohort 9. I miss you guys. I miss the energy. And I hope that we can all get together at some point soon in 2026.
Yes, I love that. And that was so great to give that shout out to Hazel McIntyre of Making Money Movers. She is also a Communitas Ventures alumna and was in Cohort 9 alongside Willie and me.
Yes.
Yes. And so now let's talk about, one, I love how you're keeping up. And also, let's talk about the future for you, because we are so excited for the next steps for the museum and all the great work that you're doing. And we're also staying tuned to the next major development. So can you talk more about what's next for you and what's the future?
What is next for the International Salsa Museum? We are currently still looking for a space and we have some leads. So I cannot mention the leads yet, but even though we're going through this whole thing with the Kingsridge Armory, there are two prospects that we're looking into. And so hopefully we'll have those conversations maybe the second quarter or third quarter of 2026. There is a exhibition that's going to happen most likely around Labor Day weekend. that we are going to be start planning in March. To do an exhibition like the one that we plan on doing is on Labor Day weekend, it takes months upon months to plan. So we're going to start doing the planning for that in March. Please be on the lookout for that. Third thing is we are going to launch a virtual exhibition through Google Arts and Culture with a very prominent salsa group. I can't mention their name yet, but please be on the lookout for that. This is one of the biggest salsa groups in the history of salsa. And then a lot of work with Tito Puente Jr. and the Tito Puente Estate. So this year, 2026, we're planting some seeds on some change that we want to see in Harlem, especially in El Barrio. And so I can't speak on it yet because I just can't. But there's some change that's going to happen pretty soon, and we're going to be planting those seeds in 2026. Lastly, my band and I, La Excelencia, we are celebrating our 20th year anniversary in 2026. 20 years out. And we are, thank you very much. 20 years out, and we are recording our fifth studio album, which is going to be a combination of all the great songs that have hit the world. For those that don't know, the name of my band is called La Excelencia. Radio in the United States doesn't really play us because our music can be a little controversial. But if there's any radio station out there that want to pick us up, please support La Excelencia. But we have some major hits. One of them right now is called Salsa Nama. It has 10 million views on YouTube. 10 million authentic views on YouTube. And we have another one that has about 3 million views. So we're climbing up the charts and we're recording our fifth album in 2026. That's basically it for right now that I can think of.
That's a lot. And that is all good things. I am.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm excited for us to continue to follow your journey and all the amazing things that you are doing at ISM. Also, I want to take a moment to go back to, so want to give a shout out again to Hazel. And she was also an alumni mentor for this cohort number 15.
Nice.
Yeah. And I also know, speaking of cohort 15, you attended the Communitas Ventures cohort 15 pitch night.
Yes, via online.
Yeah. So shout out to you for that. And
thank you.
Yeah. And now I want to end with, if you could give one short piece of advice to entrepreneurs who are passionate about making an impact in education and arts and culture, what would you say, Willie?
Well, I would say jump in, but you guys already jumped in because you're already entrepreneurs. Don't be afraid. Like I said before, don't be afraid to make big moves. It's okay. Smaller moves are great, but don't be afraid. If you see an opportunity and let's say, for instance, there's somebody that you can go and say, hey, I need funding. Don't shy away from speaking to that person. Utilize LinkedIn as your Rolodex. That's something that's helped me out tremendously. Utilizing LinkedIn. If you have to pay for the services, maybe you get the free service, you know, where they give you those promotions where you get, hey, the premium for free for a month. Mm-hmm. Sign up, get it, because that's one of the ways that you'll be able to interact with other business leaders, entrepreneurs that are out there outside of the Communitas community. LinkedIn has truly been an amazing platform for the International Salsa Museum. A lot of our press and a lot of the people that have shown interest in the International Salsa Museum came through LinkedIn. So utilize the platform as much as you can. And lastly, and this is going to sound really cliche, always stay grounded in who you are, your purpose, and don't forget what the mission is. Mm-hmm. Especially in those dark times where you're like, how am I going to move from this? How am I going to make my next move? Just sometimes you have to pivot. And if you have to pivot, it's okay. You know, it's just a redirection that's going to help you get to your goal. So don't be afraid to that. I've pivoted many, many times the past 2 years or ever since we got the grant from Communitas America. I've pivoted and it's helped us out in tremendous ways. So don't be afraid to do that as well. So utilize LinkedIn, utilize the community as much as possible and do what you got to do, because at the end of the day, if you don't do it, nobody's going to do it for you. So it's all you. You got to do it. And also stay true to your team and stay true to your community. Just stay focused and keep moving forward.
Yes, yes, yes. That is so beautiful. It's like a mentor we're speaking to. I felt that.
I do mentorship for a living as well.
I can tell. That's some good.
But I also mentor myself, right? So like as I'm speaking it, I'm also speaking to myself as well.
Yeah.
You know? I just got to give a shout out to Sun Moon.
Sun Moon Jung is the executive director of Communitas America.
And the entire team. And Edward?
Edward Greenwood is the head of venture resources for Communitas America.
And yourself and just everybody from the Communitas America team. Like, thank you guys for doing all that you do. I know it's difficult and I know it could be challenging at times, but the end result is equals to legacy. Mm-hmm. So just thank you to the Communitas America group. It's just an amazing organization and I'm so grateful to be part of it.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Willie. We do.
Thank you.
You know, you've poured into us throughout this entire conversation. So people are going to be like, okay, where can we find Willie? Where can we support all the amazing things? So please do share.
Where you can find me, there's a few ways, but on social media for the International Salsa Museum, there's at INTL Salsa Museum. So that's IN as in Nancy, TL Salsa Museum. That's our Instagram and all across the board. You can also hit me up on my personal Instagram, which is at Willie, W-I-L-L-Y, the producer. You can send me DMs through there. And lastly, if you want to email me directly, feel free to email me at wrodriguez@intlsalsamuseum.org. And also visit our website, internationalsalsamuseum.org.
Thank you so much. And we will definitely link those resources. And Willie, again, I cannot thank you enough for being on the show. And thank you so much for the work that you are doing. And we just appreciate you. And thank you for being on Communitas of New York.
Thank you very much. This was amazing. I had fun. And we'll do it again for part two.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Thank you.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 3 is produced by Simone Jean and David Michael D. Gregoria.